WHCJ Savannah 90.3 FM.
This program was pre-recorded.
Hello and welcome to Poetry in the Air, a Right Attitude radio show. This program is brought to you by the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative that enhances student learning by fostering positive attitudes towards writing. I am your host, Dee Dee Botticelli, and in this show, we will discuss poetry and play recordings of poets reading their work from the Savannah State University community and beyond. We hope that this show both entertains you and inspires you to write. We will expose you to a number of wonderful writers and encourage you to consider the value and significance that writing holds for our lives. For today's show, we will share with you the recorded poetry from a number of writers. This will establish a literary tradition that extends from the Harlem Renaissance to experimental poetry to students and faculty right here at Savannah State University. To begin, let us consider the significance of poetry, not only as an art form, but as a way of creating space in the world, a space for our lives and the lives of others. Poet and activist Audre Lorde wrote that for those whose lives and stories have become marginalized, and I quote, "Poetry is not a luxury." She also goes on to say, "Poetry is a vital necessity of our existence. It forms the quality of light within which we predicate out hopes and dreams toward survival and change, first made into language, then into idea, then into more tangible action." She continues, "Poetry is the way we help give name to the nameless so that it can be thought. The farthest external horizons of our hopes and fears are cobbled by our poems, carved from the rock experiences of our daily lives." Lorde fought against racism, sexism, and homophobia. She integrated messages of justice into her poems and essays, maintaining that the imagination is an essential site of possibility, and that poetry and the literary arts help us to envision and create spaces for ways of being that fall outside of what is allowed by the dominant social forces that aim to restrict us. We will play a number of poets, all who exhibit the necessity of poetry as the expression of our lives. Our first poems come from Audre Lorde herself. They are respectfully titled Power and A Song for Many Movements. Power is read by Kai Walker, Professor of Mass Communications.
Power by Audre Lorde. The difference between poetry and rhetoric is being ready to kill yourself instead of your children. I am trapped on a desert of raw gunshot wounds and a dead child dragging his black face off the edge of my sleep. Blood from his punctured cheeks and shoulders is the only liquid for miles, and my stomach churns at the imagined taste while my mouth splits into dry lips without loyalty or reason, thirsting for the wetness of his blood as it sinks into the whiteness of the desert where I am lost without imaginary or magic, trying to make power out of hatred and destruction, trying to heal my dying son with kisses. Only the sun will bleach his bones quicker. A policeman who shot down a 10-year-old in Queens stood over the boy with his cop shoes and childish blood, and a voice said, "Die, you little motherfucker." And there are tapes to prove it at his trial. This policeman said in his own defense, "I didn't notice the size nor nothing else, only the color, and there are tapes to prove that, too." Today, that 37-year-old white man with 13 years of police forcing was set free by 11 white men who said they were satisfied justice had been done, and one black woman who said, "They convinced me," meaning they dragged her 4'10 black woman's frame over the hot coals for 4 centuries of white male approval until she let go. The first real power she ever had, and lined her own womb with the cement to make a graveyard for our children. I have not been able to touch the destruction within me, but unless I learn to use the difference between poetry and rhetoric, my power too will run corrupt as poisonous mold, a lie limp and useless as an unconnected wire, and one day I will take my teenage plug and connect it to the nearest socket, raping an 85-year-old white woman who is someone's mother, and as I beat her senseless and set a torch to her bed, a Greek chorus will be singing in 3/4 time. Poor thing, she never heard a soul. What beasts they are.
A song for many movements. Nobody wanted to die on the way, caught between ghosts of whiteness and the real water. None of us wanted to leave our bones on the way to salvation. Three planets to the left a century of light years ago. Our spices are separate and particular, but our skins sing in complementary keys. At 7:45, meantime, we were telling the same stories over and over and over. But broken down gods survive in the crevasses and mud pots of every beleaguered city, where it is obvious there are too many bodies to cart to the ovens or gallows. And our uses have become more important than our silence. After the fall, too many empty cases of blood to bury or burn, and there will be nobody left to listen. Our labor has become more important than our silence. Our labor has become more important than our silence.
Audre Lorde's poetry first found its way into a book in 1962 when Langston Hughes selected her to appear in an anthology entitled New Negro Poets. Just as Lorde sought to create space for possibility in her work, Hughes, along with other writers from the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s, wrote poetry that identified more with the working class of black society, the laborers, the lounge singers, the jobless, the beaten down yet determined to rise. In moving away from a focus on upper-class intellectuals, Hughes and others shone a light on the injustices facing African Americans in the urban North and the Jim Crow South. It is this tradition that inspired Audre Lorde and many of the other poets featured on our show today. It is this tradition that has proved vital and necessary to our nation's understanding of justice and the role that poetry must play in helping us to imagine a more just and equal society. So here are four poems by Langston Hughes: Dreams, The Negro Speaks of Rivers, I Too, and Mother to Son.
Bring me all of your dreams, you dreamers. Bring me all of your heart melodies that I may wrap them in a blue cloud cloth away from the two rough fingers of the world. And that is what poetry may do, wrap up your dreams, protect and preserve them and hold them until maybe they come true. Columbus dreamed of finding a new world. He found it. Edison dreamed of light, more light, and he made light. All the progress that human beings have made on this old earth of ours grew out of dreams. That is why it is wise, I should think, to hold fast to dreams. For if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
I too sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow, I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody'll dare say to me, eat in the kitchen then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful we are and be ashamed. I, too, am America. Well, son, I'll tell you. Life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit out on the steps 'cause you finds it kind of hard. Don't you fall now, for I's still going, honey. I's still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
Welcome back to Poetry in the Air, a Right Attitude radio show. I'm your host, Dee Dee Botticelli. Maya Angelou, whom we sadly lost in the beginning of 2014, fell in love with language as a child, reading the works of Langston Hughes, W.E.B. Du Bois, William Shakespeare, and Edgar Allan Poe. She joined the Harlem Writers Guild in the late 1950s and worked with Dr. Martin Luther King and writers like James Baldwin. Her autobiography, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, won the National Book Award and propelled Angelou into critical acclaim. Her poetry emphasizes the human spirit, social justice, and the beauty and resolve of Black America. Today we bring to you two of her poems, Still I Rise and Human Family. We hope you enjoy them.
You may write me down in history.
You may write me down in history.
With your bitter twisted lines.
With your bitter twisted lines.
You may trod me.
You may trod me.
In the very dirt.
In the very dirt.
But still like dust.
But still like dust. I'll rise.
I'll rise.
Does my sassy name upset you? Why are you beset with gloom?
Why are you beset with gloom?
'Cause I walk like I've got all wells. I'm thinking by living wrong.
Just like moon.
Just like moon.
And like sun,
with a certainty,
with the certainty
of time,
just like
just
hope,
like hope
springing high,
springing high. Still I rise.
Did you want to see me broken?
Did you want to see me broken?
Bowed head. And lowered eyes,
shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened
by my soulful cry.
Does my heart keep this affair? Don't you take it awful hard?
Don't take it awful hard.
Cause I never think I've got gold mines digging in my leg.
You may shoot me with your words.
You may shoot me with
you may cut me with your eyes.
You may
kill me with your hatefulness.
You may kill me with your hatefulness.
But still, like life, I'll rise.
Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamond at the meeting of my mind?
I rise.
Out of the huts of history's shame.
I'll rise.
Out from a past that's rooted.
Bringing the gift.
gifts that my ancestors gave. I am the hope and the dream of the slave.
The rabbis, the priests, pundits, and the professors to believe in the awesome wonder of diversity. It is time for parents to teach young people early on that in diversity there is beauty and there is strength. I note the obvious differences in the human family. Some of us are serious. Some thrive on comedy. Some declare their lives are lived as true profundity. And others claim they really live the real reality. The variety of our skin tone can confuse, amuse, delight. Brown and pink and beige and purple, tan and blue and white. I've sailed upon the seven seas and stopped in every land. I've seen the wonders of the world, not yet one common man. I know 10,000 women called Jane and Mary Jane. I've not seen any two who really were the same. Mirror twins are different, although their features jive. And lovers think quite different thoughts while lying side by side. We love and lose in China. We weep on England's moors. We laugh and moan in Guinea and thrive on Spanish shores. We seek success in Finland, are born and die in Maine. In minor ways we differ, in major we're the same. I note the obvious differences between each sort and type, but we are more alike, my friend, than we are unalike. We are more alike, my friend, than we are unalike. We are more alike, my friend, than we are unalike. Our young must be taught that racial peculiarities do exist, but that beneath the skin, beyond the differing features, and into the true heart of being, fundamentally, we are more alike, my friend, than we are unalike. We all should know that diversity makes for a rich tapestry, and we must understand that all the threads of the tapestry are equal in value, no matter their color, equal in importance, no matter their texture.
Up next, we have two poems from Nikki Giovanni, who visited Savannah State University in January 2014. And gave a wonderful reading to a packed house of students, faculty, staff, and local community members. Nikki Giovanni has been prevalent in the American poetry scene since the late 60s and has published many books and released many spoken word albums. Her work is varied, colloquial, and accessible to young and old alike. She writes about expressions of love, activism, racial justice, and family. She maintains through performance a link to oral traditions of poetry and storytelling. Here are two of her beloved poems, My House and Ego Tripping.
I only want to be there to kiss you, as you want to be kissed when you need to be kissed. Where I want to kiss you, 'cause it's my house and I plan to live in it. I really need to hug you when I want to hug you, as you like to hug me. Does this sound like a silly poem? I mean, it's my house and I want to fry pork chops and bake sweet potatoes and call them yams, 'cause I run the kitchen and I can't stand the heat. I spent all winter in carpet stores gathering patches so I could make a quilt. Does this really sound like a silly poem? I mean, I want to keep you warm. And my windows might be dirty, but it's my house. And if I can't see out sometimes, they can't see in either. English isn't a good language to express emotion through. Mostly, I imagine, because people try to speak English instead of trying to speak through it. I don't know. Maybe this is a silly point. I'm saying it's my house, and I'll make fudge and call it love and touch my lips to the chocolate warmth and smile at old men and call that revolution. 'Cause what's real is really real. And I still like men in tight pants, 'cause everybody has something to give, and more important, needs something to take. And this is my house, and you make me happy. So this is your poem. Everybody has something to give, and more important, needs something to take. And this is my house, and you make me happy. So this is your poem. I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built the Sphinx. I designed a pyramid so tough that a star that only glows every 100 years falls into the center, giving divine, perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle, so swift, you can't catch me. For a birthday present when he was 3, I gave my son Hannibal an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son Noah built New Ark, and I stood proudly at the helm as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intoned my loving name. All praises, I am the one who would save. I sowed diamonds in my backyard. My bowels deliver uranium. The filings from my fingernails are semi-precious jewels. On a trip north, I caught a cold and blew my nose, giving oil to the Arab world. I am so hip, even my errors are correct. I sailed west to reach east and had to round off the earth as I went. The hair from my head thinned and gold was laid across 3 continents. I am so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal. I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean, I can fly like a bird in the sky.
Best known for his work in rap music, and as one of the best-selling musical artists of all time, Tupac Shakur was also a prolific poet. In an album that was released after his death in 2000, a number of authors and celebrities read and performed his poems. Tupac was an avid reader of poets like Nikki Giovanni, Sonia Sanchez, Maya Angelou, and Khalil Gibran, and both Giovanni and Sanchez are featured readers on the album. We will play for you now Nikki Giovanni reading Tupac's poem, The Rose That Grew from Concrete, followed by Malcolm Jamal Warner reading His Lady Liberty Needs Glasses.
You try to plant something in the concrete, you know what I mean? If it grow and the rose petal got all kind of scratches and marks, you're not going to say, damn, look at all the scratches and marks on the rose that grew from the concrete. You're going to be like, damn, a rose grew from the concrete? Same thing with me, you know what I mean? I grew out of all this instead of saying, damn, he did this, just like, damn, he grew out of that, he came out of that. That's what they should see, you know what I mean? All I'm trying to do is survive and make good out of the dirt, nasty, you know what I mean? Unbelievable lifestyle that they gave me. I'm just trying to make something.
Did you hear about the rose that grew from a crack in the concrete? Proving nature's laws wrong, it learned how to walk without having feet. Funny it seems, but by keeping its dreams, it learned to breathe fresh air. Long live the rose that grew from concrete, when no one else even cared. No one else even cared. The rose that grew from concrete.
Did you hear? Did you hear about the rose that grew from a crack in the concrete? Proving nature's laws wrong, it learned to walk without having feet. Funny it seems, but by keeping its dreams, it learned to breathe fresh air. Long live the rose that grew from concrete when no one else even cared.
Keeping all its dreams, proving nature's laws wrong, it learned how to walk without having feet.
To breathe the fresh air.
It came from concrete.
To breathe the fresh air. To breathe the fresh air. To breathe the fresh air.
See, you wouldn't ask why the rose that grew from the concrete had damaged petals. On the contrary, we would all celebrate its tenacity. We would all love its will to reach the sun. Well, we are the rose. These are my damaged petals. Don't ask me why. Thank God, nigga. Ask me how.
Let me show you the rhyme. Excuse me, but Lady Liberty needs glasses. And so does Mrs. Justice by her side. Both the broads are blind as bats, stumbling through the system. Justice bumped into Matulu, tripping on Geronimo Pratt, but stepped right over Oliver and his crooked partner Ronnie. Justice stubbed her big toe on Mandela, and Liberty was misquoted by the Indians. Slavery was just a learning phase, forgotten without a verdict, while Justice is on a rampage for endangered surviving black males. I mean, really, if anyone really valued life and cared about the masses, they'd take them both to Panoptical and get two pairs of glasses. Excuse me, but Lady Liberty needs glasses. I'm kicking asses up and down New York City. It's a pity brothers wanna be grimy and gritty to each other. What would your mother think smothering your brother? I see you sink into another level, dancing with the devil. Turn up the bass, cause I'm a player, also a rhyme sayer. Kinda fly, layer after layer. Why? Cause I'm blessed, cause I've progressed. I've learned my lessons. Class has always been in session, so you better take notes and stop choking on negativity.
Combining personal details from her life with the details of history and the lives that came before her, Natasha Trethewey's work has explored mixed-race experiences in the lives of working-class black men and women in the South. She is currently the Poet Laureate of Mississippi and the 19th Century Poet Laureate of the United States. Trethewey continues to publish award-winning books of poetry that expand upon the tradition previously established by the likes of Hughes, Lord, Angelou, and Giovanni. For your listening pleasure, here are poems, Miscegenation, Southern History, and Southern Gothic.
Miscegenation. In 1965, my parents broke two laws of Mississippi. They went to Ohio to marry, returned to Mississippi. They crossed the river into Cincinnati, a city whose name begins with a sound like sin, the sound of wrong, miss in Mississippi. A year later, they moved to Canada, followed a route the same as slaves, the train slicing the white glaze of winter, leaving Mississippi. Faulkner's Joe Christmas was born in winter, like Jesus, given his name for the day he was left at the orphanage, his race unknown in Mississippi. My father was reading War and Peace when he gave me my name. I was born near Easter, 1966, in Mississippi. When I turned 33, my father said, "It's your Jesus year. You're the same age he was when he died." It was spring, the hills green in Mississippi. I know more than Joe Christmas did. Natasha is a Russian name, though I'm not. It means Christmas child, even in Mississippi. Southern History. Before the war, they were happy, he said, quoting our textbook. This was senior year history class. The slaves were clothed, fed, and better off under a master's care. I watched the words blur on the page. No one raised a hand, disagreed, not even me. It was late. We still had Reconstruction to cover before the test, and, luckily, 3 hours of watching Gone with the Wind. History, the teacher said, of the Old South, a true account of how things were back then. On screen, a slave stood big as life, big mouth, bucked eyes, our textbooks grinning proof, a lie my teacher guarded. Silent, so did I. Southern Gothic. I have lain down into 1970, into the bed my parents will share for only a few more years. Early evening, they have not yet turned from each other in sleep, their bodies curved, parentheses framing the separate lives they'll wake to. Dreaming, I am again the child with too many questions, the endless why and why and why. My mother cannot answer, her mouth closed, a gesture toward her future, cold lips stitched shut. The lines in my young father's face deepen toward an expression of grief. I have come home from the schoolyard with the words that shadow us in this small southern town. Peckerwood and nigger lover, half-breed and zebra, words that take shape outside us. We're huddled on the tiny island of bed, quiet in the language of blood. The house, unsteady on its cinder block haunches, sinking deeper into the muck of ancestry. Oil lamps flicker around us, our shadows, dark glyphs on the wall, bigger and stranger than we are.
Welcome back to Poetry in the Air, a Right Attitude radio show. I'm your host, Dee Dee Botticelli. Next, we bring to you poems from members of our very own Savannah State University community. We will begin with the work of some of our student writers, some who are now just stepping into the tradition set by the poets we've heard so far today.
Hello, my name is Ashley Morgan Montford, and I am so lucky to be a junior at the illustrious Savannah State University. presenting a beautiful masterpiece written by Ashley Montford. Here's My Invisible Monster. So I never completely understood how this could be happening to me. I am not a killer, murderer, or even a terrorist. However, I do understand that I am not the best person in the world, so is this my punishment? This indescribable thing that flows through my veins and it leaks into me. It led to my very own depression, and I'm apologetic, darling, if you cannot handle this, but this is my confession. I am under lockdown on the inside, and you have no idea. My dreams, speechless. My life, questionable. My health, wouldn't we all like to know? My spirit is viciously beating against the walls of my soul, wanting to escape, to speak. I'm trapped, but I'm walking free. I am trapped, but I am walking free. I am so trapped. But here I am, standing in front of you, walking free. You look me in my face, in my eyes, and it's so, so adorable how you think you know me. You judge me and talk about me, but you don't even know me. My invisible monster. It hides in the shadows, waiting for me to be in splendor, and then it attacks me with no hesitation. It cripples me, hindering me. It forces hot tears of lava to pour down my face as pain violently bolts through my body. It gets bigger and bigger over time, validating its presence here. For a moment, though, only for a moment, I thought that it was over. For a moment, I wasn't obligated to succumb to my invisible monster. Then what was it called? Vengeance. That is the pretty present it brought back with it. I fell onto my knees praying to my God so much until they became scraped and sore, over and over again until my spirituality became under fire too. My invisible monster attacks everything in my life with no hesitation. Have you ever been so overcome with such an intensity of torturous pain that it did not leave one inch of your body untouched? My invisible monster, my torture began. My invisible monster, I always cry out, why? My invisible monster, here I am, just wanting a cure. My invisible monster, just wanting a solution, a fix. My invisible monster. I tried to cut my invisible monster out of my life, but it came back sooner than later. My invisible monster, all I ever wanted was help. My invisible monster. Actually, the last time I met my invisible monster was not too long ago, maybe a couple days. My invisible monster, still no one understands. My invisible monster. To this day, I try to control my invisible monster with shackles and chains, and after so many years and after so many flare-ups, they don't get any easier, yet the attacks still hurt, burn, and sting with a venom so pure. My invisible monster does nothing but cause havoc in my life. It laughs in my face. It picks me up only to annihilate my body and soul, crushing my hope. It punches me in my chest and snatches my breath away, only to make me ache. My invisible monster, and it's so interesting because you're looking at me, and I bet you never even knew that I had one. Three key words, my invisible monster. See, I thought you could understand, but all you can say is it hurt her. She is hurting. But you can never say how. I thought you could understand, but you simply cannot. Because this is only just a preview. There's so much more. Remember that this is a preview.
Hello, my name is Benjamin McLean. My major is English, and I'm currently a freshman here at Savannah State University. I was first interested in poetry when I found out that it was very therapeutic in nature. My poem, Kings and Page, is about vanity, and my poem, Last Day, is about my last day experience on Earth. Kings and Page. I want to be original, but every mark has been shaped and formed. I want to be up and cool, but every seat has been filled, now void. So when I try to be a king, I end up the fool. And when I try to be a knight, I get cut down too. Life is not fair. I've lived in this mood. I want to be the top note. I never want a long heavenly robe. I want to be the highest show and be known by the entire nation wall, tenfold. A little vain, this dream of mine, but if you've been second, then you'll feel this pride. It stings the first time, pricks you in the second, curses you in the third, and torments you when lessened. I want to be a king, a stage. I want proof of my work within a page. Last day. Lying near death at the age of 50 is so unfair. I hate the thought. Half of a life. This is what I'm awarded. Days of younger years, I regret. Never satisfied of the skin and place, I regret. I regret not loving my suit. I regret not cherishing every moment spent sewn and glued. I regret hating the shape, the size, the baby-faced boy, the mirrors, the pools. I regret most of all the moon moods. I regret it, but now at 50, lying instead, I feel as though I've loved you more, placed upon this sick bed. I wonder where I'll find my new suit, heaven, hell, or in a earthly tomb. I think that I'll be fine wherever the next life may bring. I think that I'll be fine, age 50, sitting in my prairie swing.
My name is Joshua Brooks Clié. I am a senior majoring in visual and performing arts with an emphasis in theater. I call this the consequences of being black. A gun is aimed, targeted in my face. Believing that this cannot be happening to me, I close my eyes to see no more. Losing all hope and accepting what fate has blessed to me, I think I'm going to die and will be dead momentarily. Begging and pleading for a second chance does not hiss from about thine lips. And so my gut tells me that the safety is off, hearing the hammer pull back and the trigger then pulled. As time slows down intentionally, I listen to the chambers inside the gun revolve, pushing out the bullet, pushing past my flesh, shattering through my skull, lodging itself in my brain. Crashing slowly down onto the ground, I blink to take life in one last time as a smile widens across my face. A puddle of blood surrounds my head and body. My spirit detaches itself from the place it once knew. A ghost, I hover to see no one behind the gun. I called this invisible. As I lay in bed, silence surrounds me. Feeling calm, the thoughts that are biologically programmed to me begin to drive, and I just listen. With the window slightly cracked open, I hear the birds speak, but to mere humans, they are just chirping. As the chirping continues, the wind begins to howl, not like a wolf or a dog howling at the moon, but like a soft whistle that only dogs can hear. I pull out my last American Spirit cigarette and I light it. I take the first hit onto the deadly serpent, taking the drag in like it was a meal during Last Supper, using everything inside my frame to blow the smoke out through my soft, pouty lips. I stare and gaze at the cigarette that is resting on the side of my hand and between my right index and finger and thumb. I think out loud and whisper to myself, oh, how it feels to live like smoke. Thinking the way it goes about in its lifespan, traveling only by the flame that was flickered from the hand, smoke only having about 5 to 10 minutes to live. The air moves that smoke from up, down, spiraling it all around. The smoke is a gymnast, accomplishing great feats. The smoke makes its ground. But then the smoke dissolves, disappearing, becoming nothing to the eyes. And oh, how it is great to be smoke, to become invisible, not seen by no one.
My name is Noble Gwynn. I'm a senior behavior analysis major. This poem is called The Letter to My Bride, and it's about love. As I partake in the humbling grace of the light bursting through the clouds of an early morning sunrise, I'm reminded of what I see in your eyes every morning, bright and clamoring beauty that amazes each day like an ever-ready flashlight searching out the scary monsters under the bed. Your radiant smile illuminates the darkest places of my heart, a heart that beats the rhythm your body dances to, affluent in the right places, fluent in the languages that speak to me. Truly, Abba Father had me in mind when he designed the intricacies of you. From the way that you look with your sun-kissed skin wrapped around a proportionate frame draped by honey-dipped hair, smelling like you've just left a part-time job at Cinnabon, to the way that you carry yourself with strong strides of authority as that of a queen, but with humbleness of speech as that of a servant, to the way that you study textbooks and notebooks stacked chaotically to the side, well-used ugly planner in front of you, obscure hip-hop blasting through your headphones. Truthfully, everything about you is liturgical worthy. Even our bed will be a sanctuary where we can be free to ceremonially practice sacred acts of worship and cry out, O God, in dramatic climactic fashion. And since a fashion sense doesn't make us sense, we can't afford to pay it much attention. Your words, the mindset of a crafty woman, not afraid to be creative with her hands, hands that interlock with mine as we pray through those nights of bitter contentiousness instead of going to bed with hearts darkened by the front lines of war, bullets, lips loaded with bullets of vicious words, and eyes bloodstained from the tears that have fallen. We wave white flags, surrendering, always being at the forefront of our remembering, our love for each other.
The next set of poets are from Savannah State University. First is Bernadette Mitchell with Ode to an Orange.
Hey, everybody. I'm Bernadette, and I did an ode to an orange. Every morning I wake to make a dream become reality and bite into the soft fluff of pleasure. Full of vitamin C, firm and sweet, not in a sexual way, an apple does not compare to sour but conservative taste of happiness. Peeling the skin slowly, not to hurt the little one, cradle inside like a baby in a new mother arms. A sea in a sunset tone, not a peachy soft shade, but a deep auburn glow. When I peel back into the flesh, be careful not to burn my flesh on the tips of the fingers on my hands that work hard to reach the middle. The sting like accidentally stepping into an ant pile does not cut across the pain on the backs of my hands when the juice has ran across the blisters. But the swelling on my tummy reinsures the effort and grace into which the seed has grown and is appreciated even after the burn. While you mock and tempt the grapefruit for not being as sweet and the nectarine for being too honey, with jealousy all other fruits have because they envy that it couldn't be the one to fulfill the hunger pains of mine. A shade of orange and orange.
Hello, my name is Shannon Hodge, and I will be doing my ode to broken hearts. To the drums that tremble, the faces of bliss once flustered are now pale and lifeless. And yet it lives, still lives, the rhythm of that stagnant beat thumping into the souls of dancers. Accidents occur like the loss of car keys after a blissful vacation, or food poisoning creeping up on you after a satisfying meal, so lost, so empty. The drums wake up the lifeless, the dulled, insomnia-filled people dedicated to the beat that rings constantly. Moved by the rhythms that cause bodies to sway, fulfilling desire like baking fresh cookies for the eighth time, and unexpectedly, they don't burn. The drums paint smiles on engaged faces. Drums have a consistent beat, but the emotions evoked are boundless. Like the tides of the sea, unpredictable as a roller coaster ride with several loops and unusual dips. Dancers give their all until their all is no more, they're empty. Like the drum, masked with the shell as hollow as the tortoise in a cave. Struck to play a rhythmic beat, to capture the attention of some, to crumble the interests of others. Strong in physical structure, but fragile for the purpose that it serves. Makes the dancer weak, the drum carries the faces of the dancers with it, even the player of the instrument. These scars are permanent due to the emotions they are evoked. It played continuously because it must. Thank you.
My name is Xavier Lampley, and this is an ode to leftover love. Ode to a love that was once burning with fire, to a love that was beautiful to look at, but you knew it was dangerous. A love that was so strong, it lit up the night sky. It was pure love, you could even say it was organic. Growing from the earth's stomach, providing the nutrients that's good for your health. This is a healthy love. It loved you for you. It didn't make you feel low or belittled. It allowed you to bloom between the cracks of asphalt and lifting your spirit so high that the feeling was immeasurable. But this love also knows its worth, never settling for anything less than it deserves. It's a proud love, sometimes mistaken for stubborn, but even babies are selfish. This love was once alive, so alive it made the earth quake, shaking up the gravel until its bones crushed. This love had hands that grabbed you and pulled you in because it missed you over the weekend. Ode to this once wondrous love. It was like a mother looking at her newborn baby for the first time. But this love is now lost. A love that is so lost it doesn't know its own reflection. So lost because it once had a home. A home that made it feel. It was a free love, like a plastic bag dancing in the wind. This love is now roaming the streets sad. and sometimes enters the body of strangers seeking for its home, which is why we sometimes feel sad out of the blue. This love is like leftovers from Sunday night's dinner. Ode to Leftover Love.
You have just finished listening to Xavier Lampley's Leftover Love. And before that, Shannon Hodge with Ode to Broken Hearts. We opened up this set with Bernadette Mitchell's Ode to an Orange. These poems were all created by students at Savannah State University. Welcome back to Poetry in the Air, the Right Attitude radio show. I am your host, Dee Dee Botticelli. Now that you have enjoyed the creative talent that our students have brought us, I am pleased to introduce some of the beautiful works one of our faculty members, Ujvala Bagal, who teaches chemistry at Savannah State University in the College of Science and Technology and at Armstrong State University. Bagal has published a book of poems entitled Red Silk Sari and participated earlier this year at the Decatur Book Festival. The poems we'll be playing for you today are titled Shadow of Ancestry, Pain, the Tolling Bell of Change, Not Just the Color of Shame, and A Torn Kind of Life.
My name is Ujvala Bagal. I'm a part-time instructor in the chemistry department at Savannah State, a full-time industrial chemist, and a poet as well. Shadow of Ancestry. In her clipped Canadian accent, Maggie says she's one quarter Bengali. In her light tan face, I see high Bengali cheekbones, almond-shaped eyes, but she's big-boned, unlike the delicate Bengali women of any caste. Maggie is a vegetarian and a heathen, she smiles. She met her Bengali grandfather during 4 months in Calcutta. The filthy dark city enchanted her. She tried wearing a sari. She visited South India. It was too hot. She talks about India as if it were a foreign land. My half-white daughter's children will talk like her. I feel myself in the icy shadow of ancestry. My white sister-in-law's Cherokee grandmother taught her superstitions, some folk medicine, but she isn't interested in Native American tribal events. My husband's Irish heritage has dwindled to a talent for making beer, a love of parties, and humor peppered with wordplay. But my brother says the half and quarter Indians he knows ask many questions about India. Thank goodness, I don't want to be just a name in history, a photograph in a book rarely opened. Pain, the tolling bell of change. Your girl turned woman steps into the plane. The door shuts. Soon she'll be off to Bonn. Time corkscrews your heart to the moment when the plane disappears. Then time is the wind that pulls you away, like a brown leaf begging to stay. Time is always cracking the glass plate of days. Time is always ripping the skin that holds the body of your years, leaving you a skeleton, then dust. But the bud breaks through dirt as though from a grave, whispers the Buddha's words, "Be awake, this is it." Not just the color of shame. The color of the dress of the wanton Christian woman, the color of the sari of the chaste Hindu bride, the color of the light that commands we stop, the color of the roses of love, the color of the poinsettia in the midst of gray winter, the color of the spurting cut, the color of Chinese paper with cash for the new year, the color of the blush and the burn, the color of the winner's ribbon, the color of the account short of money, the color of the sun's first moment, the color of the Catholic cardinal's robe, the color of the chance to make a baby, the color that tells you a baby wasn't made, the color that fades the pale face, the color that makes the dark face glow, the color that shouts, the color that calls, a torn kind of life. It's a torn kind of life in chemistry and poetry, like having two lovers or two babies, clutching both poetry and chemistry, like two handbags, two blouses. Damn it, I want them both. The greed of pleasure, the pleasure of greed, the science of poetry, and the poetry of chemistry? Oh, what about that? Here we have this green powder. We ask it, what are you? Why are you? Doesn't that sound like poetry? We poke at it with tweezers and microscope. We dissolve it, inject it into a gas, chromatograph, FTIR, mass spec. We change it into another material. What it becomes tells us more about what it is. Just like in poetry, take a thought or a feeling and scribble it out or pretend it's an animal. Write a list about it, leave hints about it. Write a raging villanelle like Dylan Thomas. What happens if you write the negative of it? What would you do if it belonged to someone else? Synthetic chemistry makes it, analytical chemistry breaks it. Synthetic chemistry explains the present with the past, walking backward from compound to components. Analytical chemistry muses on the sample's mysterious identity, both like poetry, I'd say. And sometimes we're shocked, like Rutherford when the alpha particle shot back like a bullet, like Angelou when she understood why the caged bird sings. And then we try again with a little powder, and then a lot, run more tests, repeat the same tests, change it up yet again, until we know what will happen whatever we do, and we know what the powder is, and we write draft after draft, rearrange lines, take out these words, put in others, till the poem is clean and good and true. Because practice is key to chemistry and poetry, because we need to try new things and see differently, and there are ways to find out what anything is, and there are ways to write a poem about anything.
Caribbean-born poet and essayist M. Nourbese Philip began her career as a lawyer in Toronto, Canada. Philip is a well-known experimental poet of the 21st century. She continually tests the limits of language in an effort to shift how we view the world in a context of justice and how we view justice in the context of language. This, particularly when language has so often been used to bind and restrict, to judge and condemn. For Philip, and I quote, "Poetry is about truth-telling. But you need the lie, the artifice of the form to tell those truths." The poem that we will end the show with today is Meditations on the Declension of Beauty by the Girl with the Flying Cheekbones, written by M. Nourbese Philip and read by our student Maya Caldwell. I know you'll enjoy it.
If not in yours, in whose language am I? If not in yours, in whose language am I? I am. If not in yours, in whose am I? I am yours. In whose language am I not? Am I not? Am I yours? If not in yours, if not in yours, in whose language am I? Girl with the flying cheekbones, she is. I am woman with the behind that drives men mad. And if not in yours, where is the woman with the nose broad as her strength? If not in yours, in whose language is the man with the full moon lips carrying the midnight of color split by the stars, a smile? If not in yours, in whose language am I? Am I not? Am I? Am I yours? Am I not? Am I yours? Am I? I am. If not in yours, in whose language am I? If not in yours, beautiful.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Poetry in the Air, a Right Attitude radio show. We would also like to thank those who have made it all possible: Miss Adriana Oliveira, Dr. Ryan Clark, and Dr. Lisa Yant, the WHCJ family, Ike Carter, Lady Grace Curry, Jeremy Joshua, as well as the entire poetry-loving community of Savannah State University. Poetry in the Air is a partnership between the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan and WHCJ 90.3, the voice of Savannah State University. Visit the Right Attitude at qep.savannahstate.edu and follow us at The Right Attitude on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm your host, Dee Dee Botticelli. We look forward to coming back soon with more of this and other Right Attitude radio shows. Until then, embrace your inner author.